Coming up on this week's episode of The Bonfire, UFC legend, lightweight contender Dustin Poirier, El Diamante, joins the show for the first time to break down UFC 308. He is working as a desk analyst for ESPN on this card out in Bristol with Chael Sonnen, Brendan Fitzgerald, Dean Thomas. Before he goes out there, we will talk about Ilia Topuria versus Max Holloway, Khamzat Chimaev versus Robert Whittaker, some great insight and breakdowns from the diamond. And then on the back end of the show, my MMA junkie colleague Farah Hanoun will stop in and we will give some insight on what it's been like to cover this event so far from right here on Fight Island, Yaz Island, Abu Dhabi. Make sure you hit that like, subscribe, whatever platform you're on, the support is much appreciated, and we will be right back with Dustin Poirier. All right, back now with one of my very favorite people in the sport, joining the Bonfire podcast for the very first time. It is Dustin Poirier. What's up, brother? Thank you for doing this.
What's happening, man? It's been a while since we chatted.
Yeah, it is. And in the spirit of kind of the theme of, you know, the bonfire, kind of like to reminisce a little bit to kick things off. So I want to show you this photo of the first time we met. I want to see if you remember where this was taken and when this was. Here you go. Any memories of this?
I think I do, man. Was that Ireland?
That was Ireland. That was right after we found out Joe Duffy was out of the fight and, you know, had the trouble with his weight cut, and you came down and spoke to us. It was very generous of your time and everything. I know you were bummed out, but yeah, that was, yeah, I think 2017, right?
No, that was before that.
2016.
Way before that.
Yeah.
It might have been crazy. 16 or 15. Yeah, that was a crazy time, man. We flew all the way out there. My wife flew out there. I had friends fly out there. The fight got canceled like the 2 days before the fight, but we got it rebooked. Everything's all good.
Yeah. I mean, that has that happened to you many times in your career? Is that the only one in the UFC where it was like weigh-in day, fight week, where the fight got canceled? Or has this happened more than once and I'm forgetting?
No, that was the first time it's ever happened. I've had guys miss weight and stuff, but a fight's never been called off like a few days away.
Yeah, it's crazy. I think he hit his head on the tub cutting weight. I think that's what it was.
I'm not sure. I think they said he had some concussion symptoms from his last sparring session before the fight. I think that's what they said. I don't exactly remember. You could be right, though.
Yeah. No, and you're so generous at the time. But yeah, I couldn't imagine. You know, I think that showed, you know, the class you had. You didn't blame it on him. You kind of took everything in stride. And yeah, I mean, that sucked, though, because that was a big main event in Ireland and everything for you.
Yeah, I know. I just wish I would have found out before flying all the way over there and starting the weight cut and all that. But everything worked out, you know. UFC rebooked us pretty quick.
Yeah, you guys got the fight done.
Yeah.
And that was the rebooking is where he smashed. That was pretty good, right?
That was my first really bad break. Yeah. I had two surgeries after that fight.
Yeah. Wild stuff. But obviously, the reason I wanted to have you on today, obviously, it's UFC 308 fight week. I'm here in Abu Dhabi. You're all the way across the world at home in Lafayette. But I know you're working the desk as an ESPN analyst for this card, going out to Bristol. I think your first time not doing it like at the event, right?
Yeah, so I did Miami. Then I did Vegas pay-per-view. This will be my third time working as an analyst, but this is my first time doing it like remote. Usually we're in the arena around the fans. It's a different vibe. So I'm looking forward to seeing what this is about.
Yeah, and you'll be with Chael Sonnen, Dean Thomas, Brendan Fitzgerald. Have you worked with Chael Sonnen in particular yet at a desk or no?
Yeah, I worked with him the last one I did in Vegas. Might have been UFC 300. I worked with him, I think, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. So we got some reps in. It's fun to follow guys like that because they're very informative and they talk a lot. But the energy they bring, like Chael's, his veins in his neck are popping out and he's talking about something and then they tell me in the ear, follow up. It's like tough to keep that energy, you know. I enjoy doing this, but I'm learning at the same time.
Yeah, and you got to keep his hot takes under control. We know Chael Sonnen likes to really get out there and give, you know, the spicy takes on some of these fights.
Yeah, for sure. That's what makes it so fun to watch, though, man.
Yeah. So what would you say the biggest like lessons you took from the first two times doing the desk that you bring into this, whether it's like the prep you're doing now or actually when you're in front of the camera on Saturday, Friday, whenever it may be?
There's spots on both. I'm learning on the job. You know, this is my first time doing live TV. It's one thing to sit there in front of a camera with the crew and they edit it and everything looks perfect. And I can do 10 takes if I need. Live on TV, you get one shot. You can't be at a loss for words. You can't be fumbling over your words. You know, you have to be listening to what's going on, but also listening to the earpiece because they might tell you to follow up or don't follow up when someone's talking. So you really need to be really focused on every conversation so you can pick it right up if somebody stops. You don't have time to think. But also the prep. I actually just got off a call with them maybe 20 minutes ago, and they were kind of giving me the rundown. I got some notes about the different shows we're going to be doing and how it's going to be structured. So I'm going to start watching some footage and putting together my own notes. So I go there like prepared, and I can talk about anybody on the card. And most of the people, like, I'm such a big fan of the sport, man. That's why when this ESPN thing came about, I was like, oh, let's do it. I love fighting and I watch all fights, you know? So, but it's crazy to me how big the UFC's got when they send me a list of the fight card. And I'm like, who is this? I don't remember any fights. You know, the UFC just got so big now. I don't know how many people are under contract, but even as an avid fan of the sport, sometimes, man, it's hard to keep up with everybody. And I try to watch everything.
Yeah, I know. I think last I heard it's like over 700 now. And I know they just signed a whole bunch more through Dana White's Contender Series. And usually they'll do like a round of cuts on the roster right after that. So I guess we'll see what the number looks like in a few weeks here. But yeah, man, even for me, like sometimes I'm doing stuff, I'm like, this person has had 5 fights in the UFC. Like, I don't even recall any of them. It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many fights every weekend and there's so many highlights happening every week. You kind of forget about the fights that on maybe on the prelims that went to decision. They don't stand out as much because there's so many cards. But it's a good time to be a fight fan for sure.
Yeah. Have we picked out what Robert Graham shirt we're wearing with the suit this time yet or no?
Dude, they just sent me a package. I told them I was working for ESPN. They just sent me a new package. So I actually got to pick out the shirt and the suit. My wife's going to help me out though.
Love it. Okay. Well, I mean, we'll start with the main event of this card, UFC 308. I don't know if you need to dig too deep in kind of knowing these two fighters. Of course, you know Max Holloway extremely well. He'll be challenging Ilia Topuria for the featherweight title. I want to throw this kind of thought off to you at the beginning when it comes to Max Holloway. I see a lot of people saying that every time he faces like an elite boxer, he falls short. You know, your losses to you, Volkanovski is obviously pretty good. You know, Connor. Would you say that, you know, maybe this is like a matchup against a really good boxer is where maybe he struggles the most?
Topuria is definitely a very technical and powerful boxer. He's always in position to fire big shots. It's going to be tough to say. You know, I would say the length would help him out, but also, you know, Volkanovski's a lot shorter than Max and was able to get inside and hit him with shots and use his footwork to get in. But we'll see, man. In my head, I think if Max stays long, Max has great technique as well. Kicks a lot, uses his knees, uses his legs. If he keeps that kicking distance, I think he's going to have success. But if he's pointing to the ground and they both oblige and they're in the pocket swinging, man, Topuria is fast and powerful with great technique. You know, I'm excited about this fight. It's a coin toss. I can't pick against Max, you know, like I could definitely see Topuria winning, but just Max's experience and the championship fights he's been in, I don't know. We'll see, man.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. I mean, Max is just his history in the sport so wild. I think he's going to be, if this goes 2 rounds, he'll be the second fighter to ever have more than 8 hours of cage time in the UFC, which is just like absolutely insane to spend that much time in the octagon. And we saw the last fight, you know, there's debate of whether it was actually a knockdown against Justin Gaethje. The stat says no, Max says yes, but you wonder if like, you know, eventually that durability, all that time in the cage, he's taken the most strikes in UFC history as well, starts to catch up with you. And I wonder if maybe we're starting to get to that point. Like BJ Penn was this guy before he held all these records. And then we saw kind of where things went towards the back end of his career. So I wonder, is the durability starting to become a question for you when it comes to Max?
No, not yet. I don't think so. You know, he's in his last few fights, he's absorbed big shots and didn't really stumble around. I think it was kind of a balance thing, and it was a good shot. I mean, sometimes you get hit in the right spot, you're off balance, you know, you lose your footing, things happen. But it wasn't like he was hit with the shot where he's wobbly and or the bell saved him, or the, you know, he had to clinch and survive. He kept fighting. I didn't see it.
Yeah, and we saw how he ended that fight. I mean, he stood right in the pocket and got like a absolutely incredible knockout.
But that was at 155, that fight against Justin Gaethje. Now he's back at 45. I've seen him this week. You know, he always kind of looks a little bit rough the week of the fight for 45. He always makes it. He's never missed besides like that one time against Brian Ortega a few years ago where they ruled him out medically a few days out from the fight. So he didn't even really get in the late portion. But what are your thoughts on, I guess, adding the 10 pounds, dropping it back down? People bring up Roy Jones Jr., right? When he started fluctuating his weight a lot, that's when maybe things started getting a little sketchy with the performances or whatever it may be. Do you have any concern about, you know, going back down after kind of building his body up a little bit for 55?
I mean, the worry isn't about, like, is he going to make it? I think Max makes the weight. You know, he's a professional. He'll do whatever he has to do to make it, but it won't be fun, especially after living that 55 life for however many months he did, training camp, eating more calories. You know, people don't understand Max is a big guy just because they've seen him fight at featherweight for so many years. He's a big dude, man. Like, you don't you remember when he stepped in to fight Khabib, the athletic commission pulled him, said, hey, you're too heavy to cut weight this week. And that was at 55. You know, I fought Max twice. He's big. He's tall. His legs are thick. His bones are thick. He looks slim on TV, you know, but in person, he's thick and he's strong, man. I have no clue what he walks around at, but he's as heavy as some of these walk around weight, lightweights for sure.
Yeah. I mean, the interesting part, I guess, as we get into Ilya Topuria here, there's this whole element of pointing to the ground. You know, Ilya's saying, I'm going to do it right at the beginning. Meet me in the middle. Do you think this actually happens? I mean, Max said in response to this, he's like, it's the BMF belt, not the DMF, the dumbest motherfucker. So, like, why would I do that to start the fight? And I would like to see, like, them actually fight, right? Do you think any world this happens? Or is this Ilya just kind of trying to hype up the fight and, you know, create some interest and maybe trying to bait Max into something?
It could be mind games. It could be creating interest for the pay-per-view. Who knows? We'll find out when the bell rings. But yeah, Max is right too saying that, because, you know, if it's a grueling fight, have we seen Ilya in the fourth, fifth round with a striker like Max who might be able to keep distance? You know, will he make those technical mistakes? I don't know. I think Max is crazy enough to do it. But I think he's smart enough to stay on the outside and touch and move. And maybe if it's a close fight in the last round, maybe some pointing to the ground gets done and they throw it to the bell rings. But I say that, and as I'm saying that, I'm thinking about when Max fought Justin. He was up four rounds and still did it and took the chance, you know. So these guys are warriors, man. But I don't know if the bell rings and we see pointing in the first round.
Yeah, and I guess just last point on Max. So he holds the record for most total strikes, most significant strikes landed in the UFC. He has 16 fights with over 100 significant strikes landed. The next person in the UFC who has the most is 10. He has, I think, 5 or 6 performances with 200 significant strikes landed. I don't think anyone else has more than 3 in UFC history. You've been in there with that volume game. That is his trademark, what's found him so much success. I guess what, when you're in there dealing with that, what's it like with all that coming with you? What's the best way to navigate around that volume game? Give us kind of your insight on, I guess, dealing with the pressure and the output that Max Holloway brings in all these fights.
Yeah, it's definitely a different pressure, and it does wear you out mentally and physically in there, especially on a 5-round fight. When I fought him, I tried to keep the pace, give him some of his own medicine, but you know, at the end, I was definitely feeling it. That stress slows you down, man. Even if, you know, Max isn't, even though he knocked Gaethje out with that one shot, isn't the biggest puncher. You know, we don't see him sitting guys down every fight. It's usually accuracy, timing, volume. Will Ilya be able to keep that tempo for 5 rounds? Because Max is a hard guy to put away. Ilya has the power to do it, but we've never seen it done to Max, and he's fought everybody, the biggest punchers, you know, in the UFC at those weights. It's just, Kent, my bigger question is Ilya's cardio when it comes to that much volume over 5 rounds, because he's a guy who sits down in the pocket and puts guys away. If he can't put Max in, and he's getting off the stool third, fourth, fifth round, and Max is bouncing, ready to come out and answer the bell every round, will that wear on him? I'm not sure, but this is like, obviously he beat Alexander Volkanovski, who's one of the best featherweights ever, former champ. This is a big test. If he goes in there and beats Max or lasts with Max in the volume game, outpoints him, outfights him technically on the feet, dude, that's going to say so much about Ilya and you know, where he's going to go. Obviously, he's a superstar, world champion. But if he goes in there and does what Max does and beats him at it, I mean, the sky's the limit. You know, no telling what this guy's going to do. He's talking about going to 55. He's talking about a lot of stuff.
Yeah, he really is. There's no one who's safe from his trash talk. And some of the stuff is just like, do you even really believe this? It's kind of crazy. I mean, saying you're going to go in there and knock out Max Holloway, the fastest knockout in UFC history, or like fastest title fight knockout for he's says every time you hear him, it's going to be a first round finish. And when you see someone like Max, who's never been knocked down or knocked out, that just, it's almost like hard to fathom or believe. But do you see a path to that? Do you think his power is that significant? And obviously, you know, anyone gets touched on the chin, right, they can go down. But Max, as we said, almost 8 hours of cage time, and this has never happened to him.
The more I'm around this sport, the longer it's been, like the more stuff I learn, I know that you never, anything could happen in this game. But to go out there and one punch Max is going to be almost impossible. I think it can happen for sure, but I don't think it will.
Yeah, I mean, and you mentioned, you know, never seen him in those late rounds when he's getting pushed. It's the only time he has gone to the distance of five rounds is against Josh Emmett, and he was just beating him up that entire fight. He didn't really have to do too much like retreating or taking too much damage. So how different is that cardio when you're just constantly the hammer going all five rounds compared to when maybe it's like very competitive and you're having to push in all areas?
It's completely different, but also the style of fight is going to be different. You know, Max isn't a huge power puncher who's closing distance with big leaps like somebody like Emmett would do. It's a totally different fight. And the tax it has on your body is a completely different thing. He's going to have to be in rhythm, use his footwork to get in range. There's a lot more things going on when you have to be really, really technical. Mm-hmm. Not that he wasn't against Emmett.
Yeah, for sure. Have you done much research on Ilya's ground game? Because you talk to people around him, people who have watched him coming into the UFC, they say his grappling is better than his striking, and that's like really his bread and butter.
No, I actually need to start looking at some of it. Obviously, I've seen what people say, and I've seen what he said, that his ground game is better than his stand-up game. But this is a fight where I don't think we're going to see a whole lot of that unless Ilya goes in there, you know, trying to confuse Max and shooting shots and stuff. But we don't see Ilya diving for legs or chain wrestling guys down. And also, if he does that, that's a whole other thing to put a hole in your gas tank. You know, Max is hard to take down. He's very strong. His legs are very strong. He has a really good base.
Yeah, very true. So yeah, I know you said it's a coin toss. I don't know who I'm going to pick either. I think this is one of those ones that, and that's why it's such a significant, interesting fight, because you really don't know who's going to get it done. So it's really challenging to pick. Is there a point in the week where you think you might know? Is it after you see them weigh in? Is it after they face off for the final time and you see that energy when they're rehydrated? When do you think you'll be like most confident in how this goes?
Dude, I don't know. I don't really take a whole lot from the weigh-ins unless somebody's like dying on the scale, you know, like people are holding them up and stuff. Other than that, there's not a whole lot to take from the weigh-ins for me, because I've seen guys look away in face-offs and win. I've seen guys, you know, kind of timid and go in there and be killers the next day. So I don't take a whole lot of stuff from that part. It's just their fighting styles and their history. And looking at that, Ilya's done some great things, but dude, Max is incredible. You know, I can't ever pick against Max.
Yeah, I know. It's really tough, given everything we've seen. All right, well, let's move into the co-main event a little bit. Khamzat Chimaev. I've seen him. He's here. He looks healthy. I think he's going to fight. He seemingly changed his nutrition. He's changed how he trains, much less like severe overtraining type of stuff, and he is here. I think we are going to get this fight, which I think was the biggest concern if he'd actually make it to fight week. And then you have Robert Whittaker on the other side, who's saying this was the best camp of his life. I know that's always kind of said, but like he's really nailing that home, and he's saying that parlayed off the last fight against Ikram when they were supposed to fight a few months ago. I guess what's your read on this fight early on? It's super compelling.
I'm always a Whittaker fan. I've been watching him a long time. I'm a big fan of his style. He's another guy with great takedown defense, good striking. I think it's going to be a fun fight, but it is five rounds. I was thinking about that today when I was speaking to the ESPN guys. Can Khamzat keep up that pace for five rounds with a guy who has a lot of five-round experience under his belt? You know, like Khamzat had he was really high for a while and had a period. I don't know if it was a year. It kind of, you didn't hear a whole lot of things about him. It kind of got quiet on that end, but he beat Usman. It wasn't Usman's weight class. Usman came up, he beat him. So he beat a former champ. If he goes in there and beats Robert Whittaker, another former world champion, dude, I mean, he's going to be right back on top. I think close to a title shot.
Yeah, definitely. It's always interesting when these guys go into the five rounders for the first time, right? And it's like, you know, kind of reminds me of you and Benoit St. Denis to a degree. Like, the guy's just a hammer for a lot of people, but then he gets in there with a more experienced person. This is your normal, is a five round fight that are like hard fights, championship fights. And maybe some people just aren't kind of ready for the stage of it all. So do you kind of see some parallels there a little bit too?
Yeah. Like if you've never got off the stool in the fourth round of a gritty fight and then got off the stool again the next round and had 5 minutes left, you know, that 25 minutes is a long time to fight hard, especially if you're up and down. You know, if Khamzat's wrestling heavy, gets a takedown and Whittaker gets back up, that's the stuff that really taxes you, man. Can he keep that up? We'll have to see. That's an exciting matchup for me.
Yeah. And I mean, it's completely opposite end of the coin too. We've gotten a couple of decisions out of Khamzat too now, but like overall, there's not a ton of footage on this guy, a ton of fight time, whereas Whittaker has had so many five rounders, so many long fights. When you're kind of preparing with a team and all that, and you have like so much footage to go over of a guy, does that make it easier to prepare? Is it harder because there's like so many different things? I mean, Whittaker, I think, has some really good fundamentals that he seems to use well. The 1-2 head kick is like his signature combo and stuff like that. But when you're kind of pouring over an insane amount of tape for a guy, is that helpful or can it maybe make you overthink something?
It depends the person and the camp. Earlier in my career, I used to overanalyze footage and too many notes and I would go to sleep thinking about it. Now I kind of let my coaches, we'll do one meeting where we watch footage and then that's it. The rest of camp, we kind of take notes from that. It depends what they're doing. If they're overanalyzing, you know, cause I've fought guys and had camps where I fought veterans with a lot of fight footage. But the thing is when you're somebody like Whittaker, who's been at the top so long, they're evolving as well. There might be similarities if you go back 5-6 years ago, but to stay at the top, he's had to get better and do things differently and tighten things up. So I think the last 2-3 fights are the most important.
Yeah, and Khamzat has this ability to, you know, he comes out crazy in the first round and he'll take your back and he'll hold it for a whole round if he doesn't finish you. I guess like his back takes, his choke attempts, do you think, you know, that's probably the strongest suit of his game at this point from what we've seen at least?
I think a guy like Whittaker, it's going to be tough to get around to his back. It can happen, but I think it's going to be tough to get around to his back. I don't know. I just need to see him get the takedowns because he's fighting a real 185er who's established and solid and been at the top for a long time. A very well-rounded mixed martial artist. I think he's going to have more trouble than usual with the takedowns.
Yeah, and I mean, Whittaker hasn't been submitted since October 2011, almost exactly 13 years ago. So he's not an easy guy to tap out when you get him on the ground.
Yeah, man, he's been at the highest level for so long. He's great everywhere. That's why I'm such a big fan. He can wrestle. He has jiu-jitsu, great kickboxing. And like you said, the 1-2 head kick, he does some timing things that are pretty unique.
For sure. All right, let's move on to what I think is the last kind of big marquee title stakes-worthy fight on this card. That's Magomed Ankalaev and Alexander Rakic. This is an interesting fight at light heavyweight for sure. Ankalaev, I think a lot of people thought he should have got the shot against Alex Pereira, but maybe his style or his personality, I don't know, something there that the UFC doesn't seem to be super eager to rush him into that shot. And he's fighting a guy on Rakic who's a pretty wild man. We talked to him today. We saw him here and he looks in ridiculously good shape. He said, well, he's watching Ankalaev and, you know, Pereira trade shots and interviews and on Twitter, he's being quiet. He's working his ass off and he's making sure like he can win this fight. What do you think is Rakic a live underdog here? Is Ankalaev just, you know, maybe too good? And a lot of people think he was like the uncrowned champion after he had that draw with Jan Blachowicz. They feel he should have won that one. So what do you think on this fight?
For sure he's a live underdog. This is mixed martial arts. And everything that guy does is all power. Big punches, big kicks. But if Ankalaev goes in there and beats him, I'm sure he's going to get the next title shot. You know, I thought when I worked 300, and Pajeda fought Yuri, I thought that's who was going to be next. you know. So to see him take another fight, I think it just cements himself as the next guy. But it's a big test. The guys he's fighting, I've seen train before. I've seen him spar. A lot of power, and he's long and big, man.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think people for some reason label Ankalaev as one of these like Dagestani grappler type things. I mean, he has the grappling, but more he has 6 knockouts in the light heavyweight division. Like he's won the majority or at least half of his UFC fights by knockout. So I don't know why he's getting like this label of being, you know, a guy who holds you down or stalls you against the fence or whatever.
Oh, and didn't he tear up the guy's leg? Didn't he calf kick? Yeah, for sure. He's another well-rounded guy. At this point of mixed martial arts, you can't just be a grappler anymore. You have to be good at everything. And anybody who's at the top is good at everything. No matter what people say or how they win fights, they can do it all.
Yeah, for sure. It's interesting, kind of like shifting gears a little bit, but this has been a big talking point in recent months. You know, Merab Dvalishvili wins the title. You see some of these guys, like the really strong grapplers, are kind of collecting belts at the moment. And there's, I think, a lot of frustration from the fans and, you know, like almost feeling like the wall install, lay and pray era is like coming back to a degree. Are you, when you're watching fights lately, I mean, last Saturday, 9 of 11 fights went to a decision at PFL. I was there, like a bunch of decisions as well. I know Conor McGregor was very critical of your teammate, Johnny Eblen, and his performance. But it's kind of like packaging into just this kind of perception on how grapplers are performing and maybe refs awarding, you know, not doing enough breakups, judges maybe not awarding certain defense or whatever. Do you have any kind of thoughts on this maybe, I don't know, little era we're in right now, or frustration from fans and kind of some of these fights that we're seeing?
I mean, it is what it is. It's mixed martial arts. Of course, I've been on the other side of fights where I lose decisions or get grappled heavy. And then I'm come back home and I'm like, man, that was too much. You know, I wish we would have just fought. That wasn't a fight. That was a wrestling match or whatever. But that's my problem to deal with. I have to up my skills on my takedown defense, on my submission defense, my scramble. You know, I have to be able to get back to my feet. So it is what it is. If I'm in a fight, of course, I'm going in there to have a war. I want us both bleeding. But if something happens and I change levels and get an easy takedown, you're crazy if you don't think I'm going to do it again and again and again until the bell rings and I get a decision. I'm fighting to finish, but if I find an easy route where I know that I'm dominant, I'm going to do it. So these guys who come with heavy grappling experience or wrestling experience, whatever, if they see that path to victory, that's do it. You know, that's fighting. That's mixed martial arts fighting.
Yeah. What about, I guess,
I can understand as a fan, if I buy a pay-per-view, I want to be on my feet cheering every round, watching guys swing for the fences. But I also respect and understand the intricacies and how complicated getting good at what they're doing that people are complaining about is to do, man. It's hard. It takes years and years and years of grind, years and years of practice, understanding. A lot of stuff goes into this. It might be boring to the fan, but obviously, it's me. I've been doing this so long that I respect it and know how hard it is to dominate somebody with grappling. Or even if you call it wall install, whatever you're doing, you got to be able to clinch, get under hooks, get off the fence. That's up to the guy in there to make the fight happen. That's I don't know what to say about that. That's fighting, you know?
Yeah, I guess the only thing I would say, like, that does become a little annoying sometimes if it like keeps going back to the same position and then nothing's happening and you're just letting the same guy stay in the same position and there's like no offense, no damage, no submission attempts or anything like that. And it's just like maybe each time it returns to that position, the referee should be a little more proactive in breaking it up because maybe that feels like it's stalling to a degree.
I'm with you on that. If there's no action going on, you know, like not these little punches, like the guys on the fence just kind of barely tapping, like, you know, just trying to look busy. The same thing on the ground, though, you know, like if somebody's in guard and just they're not really posturing up and trying to do real damage with elbows or trying to pass guard, if they're just sitting there letting the clock tick, you can kind of see it when that happens. Something should happen because they got that position. Even if it's on the fence, if they don't get the takedown, they get the guy against the fence and they have it on the hook against the fence, their body shotting him, whatever. You let that go for a certain amount of time, but you don't let it go for 3 minutes or something like that where you kill a whole round. The guy has to be working, trying to finish the takedown or trying to do legit damage. I'm with that.
Yeah, definitely. Well, in the spirit of breaking down fights, I guess before last thing, couple of things before I get you out of here, appreciate the time so much. I saw Armin Sarukian today. He's out here. Originally, the plan was to have him fight Islam on this card. Islam hurt his hand, or hand was still hurt after your guys' fight. It sounds like that might be in January now. What's kind of your take on that fight? Obviously, you've seen Armin in the gym at American Top Team. You just fought Islam. What are your thoughts on this fight that's probably targeted, I think, as of now for January 18th?
I think it's going to be a very competitive fight. I think it's going to be mostly a wrestling match. I do believe that. I haven't seen a whole lot of Armin striking, but I would think Islam probably has just as good, if not better, striking. And I think Islam's wrestling is better. So unless Armin just keeps it on the feet and is better than Islam on the feet, I think Islam's going to win the grappling exchanges. But that's just my opinion.
Yeah, totally. And you're here as the analyst and everything. Just got to ask, any news or updates? I know that you've done a couple interviews. You want to do maybe two more. I know we talked back at the beginning of August and you said you're going to take the 30 days. It's pretty clear what your decision is. You're going to do at least one more, maybe two. Are you just kind of waiting on word? I know there was, after you mentioned the stuff about Louisiana, one of my colleagues pulled up some notes from the recent commission meeting out there, and like the UFC had actually approached them about like a first quarter event there and stuff. So is that just what you're kind of crossing your fingers for at this point?
I could definitely say it's not going to be first quarter okay. That the UFC comes to Louisiana. So that's the whole thing. I want to do one more and retire and walk away from the sport at the top of my game. I don't want this thing to squeeze me out and try to keep seeing what I have left in this body. I want to leave on a good note. But if it's not till, we don't have a definite date. So me and the UFC has been in contact over the past few weeks. We don't have a definite date because they plan so far ahead. I don't want to wait till the end of summer or, towards the end of next year to fight again, especially my retirement fight. So if it will be that long before they come to Louisiana, maybe I get one in before that and then retire home. I'm still weighing out all the options and trying to figure it out, If the fight for Louisiana was first, second quarter, if it was closer, I would just wait it out and fight in Louisiana and retire here at home and only do one more. But if it's going to be almost a year between my last fight and a potential Louisiana fight, I don't want to sit on the sidelines that long, because the more I sit on the sidelines, the further I am away from the sport. I'm only training 2-3 times a week, still running and still hitting the bag and stuff like that almost every day. But that's not fight training. I can't be doing one jiu-jitsu class a week, one kickboxing class a week. And living my normal life. I need to be all in or all out. So if it is a long wait, I'm gonna have to take a fight just for my mental.
Yeah, you don't want to lose your edge, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's funny though, like if you did happen to do two more and you win them, I was talking to Mike Brown in Saudi Arabia out there. I don't know if you saw our interview, he's like, he wins two. Maybe it's another title run. They could give him another title shot. Like,
oh, man.
He feels like you got another title run. He said maybe you have three more in you, but I think that's maybe just the belief of your team.
I definitely have it in me. It's just I don't know if I want to give all of what I have left in me. I've been doing this a long time, man, and it's not good for you. But I'm here for it. We'll see. One at a time. I just need to get a name and a date for the potential next one. Or get a solid date on the New Orleans or Louisiana fight card, and then I could plan it from there.
Yeah. We've talked so many times, like in recent years, about your criteria for kind of the opponents and like things that matter to you, get you excited. Is that the same for this, or is like the idea of a retirement fight? I'm sure you want a logical opponent. You're not going to fight just anyone, but just the retirement fight and like that whole element of it kind of check those boxes, maybe less so than the opponent.
I want bangers. I want fights that I'm nervous about, that are dangerous. I want to leave the sport the same way I've always fought it. The hardest fights, the toughest fights. I want five rounds. I want the heavy hitters,
Yeah. Yes, sir. Awesome. Well, it's going to happen soon here. Hopefully, I hope you get good news. And yeah, man, I appreciate you doing this. It's like kind of being on the media side. Do you think I saw that comment, that article I put out today, showing that you're going to be working the desk and people are like, when's Dustin going to be in the booth? Are they grooming for this? Would you ever want to do like actual cage side commentary at one point?
I'd love to. I'd love to, man. I want to be part of this sport. Whenever the Louisiana fight happens or if it doesn't happen, if I lay my gloves down in another city, when I walk away from the cage, I still want to be around the sport. You know, it's it sounds corny, and I've probably said this so many times over the years, but it's molded me into who I am. I'm forever in debt to this sport and want to be part of it. And I want to see the new guys come up. And I just feel comfortable about talking about fighting. The live TV is a little bit different kind of edge, but just talking about fighting, I can explain and understand and help people understand who don't know anything about fighting, just because I've been doing it so long and I've been in so many crazy positions and scrambles and exchanges with the best guys in the world. You know, I just want to be part of the sport whenever I lay the gloves down. Whatever that will be, we'll see. But working for ESPN has been fun. Everybody behind the scenes there is incredible. And we'll see where it goes, man.
Yeah, for sure. Well, hopefully you got a date soon. My ideal scenario is you and Kayla Harrison get fights close to each other, because Kayla said that she wants to have the first in-person edition of the Bonfire at her place down there. She said she just built like a big fire pit and stuff. So I'd love to get back down to Florida and kind of maybe do something with both of you guys at the same time before some big fights there.
Yeah, if it works out, I'm there, bro, for sure.
Yeah. All right. Sounds good, Dustin. Really appreciate you doing this. And hopefully you'll be on here many, many times in the future. And we'll take a break and we'll be back with my colleague Farah Hanoon to talk a little bit more about UFC 308.
All right. Back now with one of my other favorite people in the biz, my MMA junkie colleague, Farah Hanoon. I know, Farah, it's a tough act to follow Dustin Poirier on the show today, but I'm sure you'll do a great job as always. We're here at UFC 308 in the host hotel lobby, feeling all the vibes. How are you enjoying being here so far?
Everything's been great. That's been a nice start for us at Fight Week. So it was enjoyable at UAE Warriors yesterday. Got some good content, so it's been awesome.
Yeah, Tuesday night we went to UAE Warriors. It's Wednesday morning now. We're getting ready to go to Media Day, and then obviously kind of the real Fight Week kicks off now. We have the press conference. There's a power slap event if you're into that type of thing. No, you're not in particular, but yeah, it's a loaded week. Weigh-ins, and then of course UFC 308. This thing's a monster. Does this feel like a bigger one? You've been here for pretty much every Abu Dhabi pay-per-view. How does this one stack up in your mind?
Listen, like, the main event for me is like one of the most highly anticipated fights in a very, very long time for me. So that alone, and you forget about Hamzat and Whitaker, which is crazy, right? I think obviously it's been a minute since we've seen Hamzat, so
I think we're traumatized.
Yeah, we don't want to get too excited, yeah. Right? So I think once we see them at Media Day and stuff like that, it's really gonna kick in. That's a fantastic, like, main and co-main are incredible. The whole card is, but main and co-main are just fantastic.
Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting compared to like some of the recent ones. There's no Khabib, there's no Islam on this card. Does Hamza stack up to those guys in terms of like a star in this region, or has he been held back by the inactivity? Like, how would you compare him right now to some of those big stars?
I think the inactivity probably hurt him a little bit, but I think once he makes the walk and if he's successful, he's going to pick up right where he left off, because he came in with a bang, right? So the expectations were so high. He was like insanely active, and he said all those bold things. He was like bouncing between two divisions and whatnot. So he's still undefeated. He's still a big star. I still believe there's a ton of potential for him, but it's just all the inactivity, the health issues and all that stuff have kind of set him back a little bit. So I think people tend to not get too excited when it comes to him. But I think if he can go out there on Saturday and put on a Hamza-like performance, I think he'll pick up right where he left off.
Yeah, it's interesting hearing him talk a little bit in the media. We'll obviously get our chance to speak with him at Media Day, and obviously make sure to watch that on MMA Junkie. But you see some of the other clips. He's saying like he had depression, and he's, you know, even crazy stuff like in how he was training. And he's like, I didn't even know how to take vitamins properly and things like that. Did you hear that kind of stuff around him, like on his rise, that even though this guy is so good, like maybe his discipline is a little bit messy, like the things around him are a little bit messy?
I think what I kept hearing about Hamza is he overtrains. I think that's what I've been hearing from day one. Like, even when guys like back in the day, Jimmy Manuel, Gustafsson and stuff, like all-stars Sweden, they would talk about how he's such a workhorse and stuff like that. And we've seen a lot of fighters that are live at the gym. Bilal is another one of those guys who's just training 24/7. But when you're Hamza, you feel unstoppable, right? You're undefeated, you're dominating. You don't think that these things can happen to you. So when they do, I can understand why he feels the way he does, especially with all the hype and momentum. He was on the cusp of a title shot, and it seems like it's the same narrative. Him being on the cusp of a title shot, but it's been almost a year and a half or almost two it's the same narrative, and he just hasn't gotten to that point that he wants to. Always so close, but hasn't. So I think that's why it's been so hard on him, because he is used to kind of living in the gym, but sometimes this stuff takes a toll on you. So
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, he was saying, I think momentum is the really big important part for him. And I think he did an interview with CBS Sports where he said the stuff about entering the U.S. is like not accurate. He can fight there. It's just being like issues with getting a date set because he can't actually fight. Is that what you've heard as well?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like all the rumors surrounding him have been debunked. I know some people were talking about him retiring, then his manager had told me no, none of that is true. I think it's just because he doesn't do a ton of media, right? So we're not always hearing it straight from him. There are some guys who are on social media 24/7, right, and always posting and updating. So yeah, but I think they want him in this region. I think they know that they can make a start out of him here. We're hearing that the UFC might be coming here a lot more next year, so it's understandable why they would want someone like Hamza to continue to help make big events happen here.
Yeah, just so I need more 14-hour flights to Dubai and Abu Dhabi. Do you think it's going to be Sean Strickland next at middleweight, or is there any way, like, from what we know, that fight isn't official, at least, or signed. Is there any way if Hamza does something crazy, or maybe even Whitaker, because they have that event in Sydney that they announced for February 12th, UFC 312. Could one of these guys ruin Sean Strickland's day?
You know, and the only, because sometimes now we've noticed that the UFC, when it comes to certain events, they want certain people on certain events. So it's like when you hear like Islam wants to fight in Abu Dhabi, who's ready to fight him in Abu Dhabi at that date? That's kind of how the UFC's been working right now. It's like, who's ready to go? So I think if Sean Strickland gives them a tough time, I know he's not a fan of traveling outside of the US, and he keeps saying, why do you guys keep booking me at Canada, Australia, whatnot? So unless Strickland acts super difficult, I wouldn't be surprised that if Hamza or Whitaker, the winner of this fight, comes out unscathed. And Strickland's being difficult, and they want Drickus in Sydney, absolutely, because that's what his coach said right in a recent interview, I think, with Submission Radio. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, Strickland's got to play ball. And I mean, I'm surprised he wouldn't want to go there, though, because I was there for the fight with Israel Adesanya, and he was beloved by the Sydney crowd. And, you know, Drickus had his fans, too. Like, that actually feels like a really good fight for that region, even though technically neither guy has the tie. But they both had their past two fights in Australia. So, yeah, I think that's an interesting move. We'll see if they ultimately do that. You know, we'll talk more and see interactions between Ilya Topuria and Max Holloway. But, like, right now, as we get into things, haven't seen them make weight, haven't seen how they look on the scale. What's kind of your read on this fight a few days out?
On them?
Like, yeah, the main event.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Ilya's been saying some crazy stuff. Like, he's
taking, it's unreal.
It's unreal. I mean, look, I'm a fan of Ilya. I think he's a fantastic fighter, but I think he's gone from kind of confident to arrogant right now. Like, he's kind of crossed that line of just confidence.
Yeah.
So I think he's rubbing a lot of people the wrong way. But listen, if he goes out there and does what he says, it's only going to push him that much more. So he knows what he's doing. But he's just talking about 3-weight class. He's going after Bilal Muhammad. He's talking all sorts of crazy stuff. So he used to be a bantamweight, FYI. He ended up missing weight in a Cage Warriors title fight, which is why he never became Cage Warriors champion. He won that fight. But that's kind of what prompted the move to 45. And I was talking about 170. So you're old, man. You've got Max's a tough fight. But
It always seems like, you know, when you talk this kind of stuff, that's when, like, the guys lose. I can't remember, like, aside from Prime Connor, like, someone who just talked this crazy amount of shit and then actually, like, went in there and did it over and over. And, you know, this is his first title defense.
Yeah.
So, like, he doesn't have the proven track record. Of course, he has the undefeated record. But, like, at this level against these guys, it's a huge leap from Josh Emmett to Volkanovski. And then, you know, this is, like, probably a lateral leap. But, yeah, before that, like, he pretty much just has the one truly signature win at this point. And you could raise a lot of questions about that Volkanovski win with the turnaround after the Islam Makhachev knockout. Like, we'll never know for sure what Volkanovski's durability was, his mindset was in that fight, but you can ask the questions for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, he was, I can't remember which interview, so I wanted to shout out the outlet, but he said something along the lines of Josh Emmett being a tougher fight than Max.
Like, yeah, I saw that this morning as well.
Yeah, yeah, so.
I mean, Josh Emmett is very tough, and he took an extreme beating, but that was a one-way fight. Like, he didn't really get pushed, and I talked about this with Dustin on the previous segment. Like, it's easy to go 25 minutes when you're the hammer over and over, but, like, you know, when you have someone pushing back on you, you're having to do a lot of stuff that maybe saps up more energy. It's really tricky, and, yeah, we just haven't seen that from him. There's so many questions, but the mystery and the aura is at least compelling, and he is doing a hell of a job selling this fight, at least in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely. Look, he knows that he can emerge as one of the biggest stars in the UFC. We've seen kind of the amount of celebrities he hangs out with in Spain, all the famous football or soccer stars and whatnot. They know the sky's the limit. They're talking about going to Spain next year and all that stuff. So he knows what a win here could do for him and all the possibilities next year. So, but yeah, it's just setting yourself up. If you lose, it's not great. If you win, Sky's the limit.
For sure. Let's talk about you for a sec, Farah. I'm curious. Yeah, I obviously worked with you at MMA Junkie for a number of years, but I want, like, what got you into the sport? Do you remember, like, a first fight or first event that you watched that you, like, were like, okay, this is very intriguing to me, either as just, like, a fan or wanting to do it as media?
Well, I grew up as a pro wrestling fan because of my brother. So I grew up with an older brother and two cousins. So I used to spend my whole time with, like, guys every summer. So whatever they'd watch, I'd watch. So they got me into MMA. And I remember early on, it was Anderson Silva and Uriah Faber, probably the two that really got me into it. My brother was actually a really big Dominic Cruz fan. And we always tend to do the opposite. It's just by nature, like, I have an older brother. So I remember watching Dominic Cruz and seeing who his rival was. I was like, okay, Uriah is such a cool dude. Like, he's the come with a big smile on his face. He was kind of like not what you would expect a fighter to look like, and he was full of energy, and I loved watching him fight. Anderson Silva was just next level watching him compete. George St. Pierre is another one watching. So I my brother got me into it, and I've always kind of been, like, as a sports fan, even as a basketball fan, because that's my sport, but I always kind of, like, don't just watch a sport. I always looked at, like, statistics. I would focus on things like commentary and stuff like that. So I noticed eventually that I wanted to get involved in sports. If I wasn't going to be a pro athlete, I wanted to be involved in sports in some shape or form. So basketball was actually the goal for me, but then I kind of made a last second switch because I felt like it was a bit of a niche market with the sport growing, especially where I'm from. So I felt like, you know what, maybe there's something there. So I just made a last second switch.
Do you regret that? You know, I feel like you're the second coming of Caitlin Clark over here. Do you look at her and you're like, shit, I should have kept going with that?
I don't know. I mean, maybe I regret not playing.
Right.
Yeah, but coverage, I think it's worked out pretty fine with MMA.
Yeah.
I do love basketball, but maybe if I could have gotten a chance to play pro, I just never could. I was never really eligible growing up in Egypt because I'm not Egyptian. So that I had to travel and go, and I didn't do that. So that's something I regret.
It's never too late, Farah.
Yeah.
She makes buckets on, like, what, the first Fight Island? I wasn't here. They used to have, like, a basketball court on this
thing. That was, like, the best thing.
Yeah, you hear the story as Farah just destroyed everyone, man, woman, big, small. It didn't matter who they brought to her. They all fall. I'm guessing you didn't pull an all-nighter to watch LeBron James and Bronny James get
on
the court together.
I did not. I saw the social clips.
That's all you need, I guess. But that was a pretty cool moment for sure.
Yeah.
And then I think the Celtics hit an NBA record 29 three-pointers in their opening game as well, which is pretty insane. So we had that opening night. Yeah, and then I think you're, and as far as when you got into media, right, like when you came to MMA Junkie, it started out, you were just like doing a lot of reporting and stuff for, like, you know, on Twitter, basically. Did you have, like, a first outlet? Because I know, like, you and Nolan King came in around the same time. He did, like, a few small things at, like, you know, MMA News or whatever, like, some of these outlets were. Did you have one of those, or was it pretty much straight to Junkie?
No, I was at blog writing for a while, just like a random blog, and then eventually I realized, like, no one's reading this stuff, so I eventually kind of put the writing to the side, and then I was doing a lot of kind of, like, reporting, interviews on my own YouTube channel and just stuff on Twitter, and I ran the other page on Instagram, the UFC News Alerts.
Yes.
Which was huge for me because I built a ton of contacts through that.
Yeah.
But I had no idea what I was doing when I first started. I just wanted to do something that would separate me. And all I could do, all I had to offer was, okay, I know how crazy obsessive I can be with updating people, because the idea I got was, so I'm a football fan, or soccer as they say in the US. So for a while I wasn't watching it, and then I found a page on Instagram that would just give me all my news, and Instagram was starting to get really popular at that time. So I'm like, you know what, that's a good idea to give people, because people don't really like to read unless you're established, right? Why would they read, like, a complete random? So I was like, you know what, this is a good opportunity to kind of build something where people can find all their news in one source, and that's what I was doing, and it kind of blew up the page, and I kind of just took it from there.
Yeah, it's always interesting to see, like, how people got in the business and how people ask us advice, like, on how to do it, because, you know, I've been at MMA Junkie almost 12 to 13 years now, and I feel like the stuff that helped me take that step is not relevant anymore because the industry has just evolved. Do you feel like that's the case for you? Like, would that be a hard path to take now, you think, given how the business has evolved, or do you think that's still, you know, the approaches and the steps you took, is that still something that someone could look at and maybe follow to an outlet like an MMA Junkie and MMA Fighting, etc.?
I mean, because I went with a very trial and error type of thing, so it was risky because I didn't really, like, have any guidance, or I didn't know what I was doing, but you just for me, I just relied on being, like, very persistent and, you know, pulling a lot of all-nighters and just being on top of everything, which is exhausting, but it just it was my way of doing it. But you just have to find your niche in some way or form. That was my niche. Like, mm-hmm. I was just happy to be, like, the fastest. To a point, like, even now I still have the page, but it's like people expect so much. I'm like, I don't have time for this anymore. So the fact to see how many people get outraged by me not being that efficient anymore is flattering but annoying at the same time. But it's like I've wanted to ditch this page for so long, but it's like my baby, so I can't. So it's still there, but I just, it's, I like, I'm too busy for it right now.
If there's any buyers out there, I'm sure Farah would love, and I, you know, make her a nice offer, slide into those DMs, you never know. Yeah, that's great. So yeah, here we are. Look at us now out here in Abu Dhabi. It's going to be an interesting week ahead. Appreciate everyone watching and tuning in. Farah, I hope to have you on the show many, many times in the future going forward. And yeah, seriously, Farah Hanoun is the workhorse behind MMA Junkie. So much of the content you see up there is a product of her. So we thank you for all your work, and I thank you for being here on the Bonfire for the first time of what I hope is many in the future. And I hope everyone enjoys. We'll be right back to wrap things up. Thanks so much to Dustin Poirier and Farah Hanoun for joining the show. One of my favorites so far. We are rolling here 4 weeks in on the Bonfire. Please, everyone, continue to show your support in any means possible. It means the world to me. We will be back with another episode next week. I will be home for one day after this card and then off to Edmonton for UFC Fight Night, headlined by Amir Albazi versus Brandon Moreno. We'll have another guest from on site there in Edmonton. Appreciate everyone's support, and thank you for watching.